This is a recording of A Life of God in the Soul of Man by Henry Scougal. This recording is provided by the Christian Classics Ethereal Library and read by Brother Mark Dextrous of Ventura, California, USA. For more information or to volunteer, please visit us at ccel.org. And now, A Life of God in the Soul of Man. Part 1. On Religion, the Natural and Divine Life, and the Exemplification of Divine Love in Our Blessed Savior. My dear friend, this designation doth give you a title to all endeavors whereby I can serve your interests, and your pious inclinations to do so, happily conspire with my duty, that I shall not need to step out of my road to gratify you, but I may at once perform an office of friendship, and discharge an exercise of my function, since the advancing of virtue and holiness, which I hope you make your greatest study, is the peculiar business of my employment. This, therefore, is the most popular instance wherein I can vent my affection and express my gratitude toward you, and I shall not any longer delay the performance of the promise I made to you to this purpose. For though I know you are provided with better helps of this nature than any I can offer you, nor are you like to meet with anything here which you knew not before, yet I am hopeful that what comes from one whom you are pleased to honor with your friendship, and which is more particularly designed for your use, will be kindly accepted by your and God's providence, perhaps may so direct my thoughts that something or other may prove useful to you. Nor shall I doubt your pardon, if, for molding my discourse into the better frame, I lay a low foundation, beginning with the nature and the properties of religion, and all along give such way to my thoughts, in the prosecution of the subject, as may bring me to say many things which were not necessary, did I only consider to whom I am writing. I cannot speak of religion, but I must lament that among so many pretenders to it, so few understand what it means, some placing it in the understanding, in orthodox notions and opinions, and all the account they can give of their religion is that there are of this or other persuasion, and have joined themselves to one of those many sects whereinto Christendom is most unhappily divided. Others place it in the outward man, in a constant course of external duties, and a model of performances. If they live peaceably with their neighbors, keep a temperate diet, observe the returns of worship, frequenting the church, or their closet, and sometimes extend their hands to the relief of the poor, they think they have sufficiently acquitted themselves. Others again put all religion in the affections, in rapturous hearts, and ecstatic devotion, and all they aim at is to pray with passion, and to think of heaven with pleasure, and to be affected with those kind and melting expressions wherewith they count their Savior, till they persuade themselves that they are mightily in love with Him, and from thence assume a great confidence of their salvation, which they esteem the chief of Christian graces. Thus are these things which have any resemblance of piety, and are at best but means of obtaining it, and particular exercise of it, frequently mistaken for the whole of religion. Nay, sometimes wickedness and vice pretend to that name. I speak not now of those gross impieties wherewith the heathens were wont to worship their gods. There are but too many Christians who would consecrate their vices and follow their corrupt affections, whose ragged humor and sullen pride must pass for Christian severity, whose fierce wrath and a bitter rage against their enemies must be called holy zeal, whose petulancy towards their superiors or rebellion against their governors must have the name of Christian courage and resolution. But certainly religion is quite another thing, and they who are acquainted with it will entertain far different thoughts and disdain all those shadows and false imitations of it. They know by experience that true religion is a union of the soul with God, a real participation of the divine nature, the very image of God drawn upon the soul, or in the apostle's phrase, it is Christ formed within us. Briefly, I know not how the nature of religion can be more fully expressed than by calling it a divine life, and under these terms I shall discourse of it, showing first how it is called a life, and then how it is termed divine. I choose to express it by the name of life first, because of its permanency and stability. Religion, if not a sudden start or a passion of the mind, not though it should rise to the height of a rapture and seem to transport a man to extraordinary performances. There are few but have convictions of the necessity of doing something for the salvation of their souls, which may push them forward some steps with a great deal of seeming haste, but in none they flag and give over. They were in a hot mood, but now they are cooled. They did shoot forth fresh and high, but are quickly withered, because they had no root in themselves. These sudden fits may be compared to the violent and the convulsive motions of bodies newly beheaded, caused by the agitations of the animal spirits after the soul is departed, which, however, violent and impetuous, can be of no long continuance, whereas the motions of the holy souls are constant and regular, proceeding from a permanent and a lively principle. It is true, this divine life continueth not always in that same strength and vigor, but many times suffers sad decays, and holy men find greater difficulty in resisting temptations, and less alacrity in the performance of their duties. Yet it is not quite extinguished, nor are they abandoned to the power of those corrupt affections which sway and overrule the rest of the world. Again, religion may be designed by the name of life because it is an inward, free, and self-moving principle. Those who have made progress in it are not actuated only by external motives, driven merely by threatenings, nor bribed by promises, nor constrained by laws, but are powerfully inclined to that which is good, and delight in the performance of it. The love which a pious man bears to God and goodness is not so much by virtue of a command, enjoining him so to do, as by a new nature, instructing and prompting him to it. Nor doth he pay his devotions as an unavoidable tribute, only to appease the divine justice, or quiet his clamorous conscience. But those religious exercises are the proper emanations of the divine life, the natural employments of the newborn soul. He prays, he gives thanks, he repents, not only because these things are commanded, but rather because he is sensible of his wants and of the divine goodness and of the folly and misery of a sinful life. His charity is not forced, nor his alms extorted from him. His love makes him willing to give, and though they were no outward obligation, his heart would devise liberal things. Injustice or intemperance and all other vices are as contrary to his temper and constitution as the basest actions are to the most generous spirit, and impudence and scurrility to those who are naturally modest. So that I may well say with St. John, whosoever is born of God doth not commit sin, for his seed remaineth in him, and he cannot sin, because he is born of God. Though holy and religious persons do much eye the law of God, and have a